the total number of COVID-19 deaths in the United States surpasses 510,000, while the country's infections near 28.5 million. Iran says the U.S. is encouraging organized terrorism with its support for Daesh and the recent attack on resistance forces in Syria. And supporters of Tunisia's biggest political party rally in the capital to back Prime Minister Hisham Mechichi and to show their opposition to President Kais Saied. Hello and welcome from Tehran. You're tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. First story, Texas to the United States this hour, where the total COVID deaths there have surpassed 510,000 as the U.S. is struggling with new variants of the virus. Data by Johns Hopkins University shows more than 28.4 million people have contracted the disease in the U.S. The country has the largest infection and death tallies in the world. The cases and hospitalizations have seen a downward trend since early January. Fatalities have also been declining during the past week. However, health officials have warned that the declines could stall due to more infectious variants spreading across the country. Researchers have now reported a new COVID variant that surfaced in New York City. They say it's more resistant to some existing vaccines than earlier versions of the coronavirus. EU leaders expressed concern over the spread of COVID-19 variants within the 27-nation bloc amid criticism that vaccines are being administered too slowly. While the handling of the pandemic in the EU is contributing to economic uncertainty and social inequality, Jerome Hughes brings us more.
Like millions of other young people in the EU, Charles Prevot feels he has not been given adequate support by authorities during the pandemic. In order to survive, the entrepreneur has purchased his own hot dog stand, which he operates in Brussels.
I was working on a restaurant. I was managing a restaurant and I lost my job and I was like, what I can do? What I can do next? What we can do? What the young people, the young men, the young ladies in this world, in this city, in this country, what they can do because we don't have any help?
As businesses continue to fold in the EU and millions lose their jobs, people feel there is no hope. Only 6.4% of the bloc's population have received a vaccine. That's tiny compared to the UK and US. A two-day video conference involving EU leaders has just concluded. They are very concerned about COVID-19 mutations.
The B.1.1.7 is by now in all member states but one. The South African variant is in 14 member states and the Brazilian variant in 7. So there's a lot of challenge ahead of us.
Variants are allowed to flourish when people are not vaccinated. Experts say the bureaucratic structures of the EU have resulted in citizens having to wait far too long for vaccines. However, EU leaders say producers are not keeping their promises in terms of supply.
We want more predictability and transparency to ensure that pharmaceutical companies comply with their commitments.
Health officials warn mixed messages from EU leaders about the efficacy of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine are making citizens reluctant to take the jab. Two other vaccines have been approved here, but supply remains a big problem. A fourth vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is likely to be approved next month. During their summit, EU leaders talked at length about the importance of developing certificates to show people have been vaccinated in order to open up travel. Commentators are describing this as laughable, saying it is putting the cart before the horse, given the current state of play with respect to the rollout of vaccines. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iran has recorded nearly 8,000 new infections and 81 new deaths from coronavirus during the past 24 hours. According to figures by the health ministry, Iran's total virus fatalities are now nearly 60,000 out of more than 1.6 million cases. More than 1.3 million patients have so far recovered from the disease. Iran has been implementing restrictions since November, including curbs on travel between cities. The measures helped significantly reduce daily deaths from their peak of more than 400. Authorities are now urging people to strictly implement health protocols after cases of British variant were recently reported in several cities. Now it's time for this hour's news review. Iran's foreign minister has described as suspicious some recent attacks in Iraq. Mohammad Javad Zarif says the attacks may have been carried out to disrupt ties between Tehran and Baghdad. Zarif also condemned Thursday's U.S. airstrikes in Syria and called them dangerous. Well, the top Iranian diplomat made the remarks in a meeting with his Iraqi counterpart in Tehran. Fuad Hossein gave assurances that Baghdad would not allow anyone to exploit the recent events in Iraq to damage relations with Tehran. The Iraqi official also met with the secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council. Ali Shamkhani slammed the U.S. attack in Syria as organized terrorism. He said Washington seeks to boost Daesh extremists by targeting anti-terror fighters. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review, Saeed Shahabi, activist and West Asia expert out of London, Laith Maruf, activist and political analyst out of Beirut. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start off with Saeed in London. Why do you think that the U.S. attacked Syria on Thursday? What's the main goal behind this now Biden administration attack on Syria?
Thank you very much. Of course, many people were baffled by the attack because they thought that Mr. Biden would not be going in the same path as his predecessor, having made a lot of noise about his foreign policy and that he was extending hands to others like Iran and so on, and that he was also going to change his foreign policy in the Middle East. Yet, he has inaugurated his reign by such attacks in addition to other political moves. This has really baffled many people who wanted to see a more peaceful presidency in the United States. Attacking and using arms to settle scores with others is simply not going to change the fact in the Middle East, and it is only likely to create more problems for the people of the Middle East as well as the United States. So, is it that Mr. Biden is so weak that the military are the people who called the shots? Or does he want to show that he is also a firm person? I do not believe that there is a point of really putting a lot of weight behind the media claims that Biden will be different in his approach. It is clear that the foreign policy is not done by the White House and that the establishment itself will continue the foreign policy of the United States as well as its military approach to the relations with other nations. It was a very regrettable, very serious attack on Syria, and this will only lead to more encouragement to the Israelis to continue attacking Syria and other places, and Iraq possibly. So I think the relations with Iraq also is likely to suffer between, of course, America and Iraq, because this is, again, violation of the sovereignty of the Iraqis, Iraqi state itself, which is seen unable and incapable of safeguarding the rights and security of its own citizens. It is a very sad episode right at the beginning of the of Mr. Biden's presidency.
Well, Laith, your take. Now, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council said basically that this is just the support for the Daesh terrorist group by the United States. Your assessment of the overall situation and why it happened. What's the goal?
I'm surprised that anybody would be surprised that Biden did this. Biden is a person that was behind the destruction of Iraq, and he was always supportive of the fragmentation of Iraq into multiple states, and such is his aims for the rest of the Arab and the Muslim world. That's, in general, what the United States wants to do for the region. And given that the United States doesn't want to open Iraq back into a battle zone for the regional war, they are targeting Syria in this action to keep Syria as the battle zone. Maybe this was the intention, but ultimately this could lead to the targeting of American troops in Syria. If the United States chooses Syria to be the battle zone, maybe it's going to regret it.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you for being with us on this News Review. Saeed Chaabi, activist and West Asia expert out of London, and Laith Maruf, activist and political analyst out of Beirut. Appreciate you being with us. The United States has released a report confirming that Saudi Arabia's crown prince and de facto ruler Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for the murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, but Washington has failed to take concrete action to bring the main culprit to justice. More in this report.
The U.S. has finally released a long-awaited report on the gruesome murder of Jamal Khashoggi, confirming that the Crown Prince had personally approved an operation to capture or kill him. Accordingly, the U.S. says it has imposed sanctions against Saudi Arabia over the murder. However, Washington's restrictions only target members of the Saudi Royal Guard's Rapid Intervention Force, not their patron and commander, Mohammed bin Salman. That once again exposes Washington's double standard in dealing with criminals, despite its own intelligence assessment that Khashoggi was killed and his body dismembered at the behest of bin Salman in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. The UN has reacted to the CIA report, saying the U.S. fails to take practical steps to hold the main culprit accountable.
With the release of the U.S. report confirming Saudi officials' culpability at the highest levels, the United States should now take the lead in ensuring accountability for this crime and for setting in place the international mechanisms to prevent and punish such acts in the future. The United States government should impose sanctions against the Crown Prince as it has done for the other perpetrators, targeting his personal assets, but also his international engagements.
Reactions are also pouring in from other authorities and legal experts who have dismissed the U.S. report as too little, too late.
This is not enough. The Crown Prince needs to face accountability. He needs to face sanctions, asset freezes, travel bans.
Analysts are also criticizing the White House for failing to take the Saudi Crown Prince to account.
Nobody saw the actual report until now. And yes, it's confirmed that indeed, as the Saudis say, a rogue operative was responsible. And that rogue is bin Salman himself.
Many believe Washington's failure to hold bin Salman accountable is due to its interests. Even the U.S. itself has admitted that it is seeking its own interests in maintaining a close partnership with Riyadh.
I would say the relationship with Saudi Arabia is an important one. We have significant ongoing interests. We remain committed to the defense of the kingdom. And so what we've done by the actions that we've taken is really not to rupture the relationship, but to recalibrate it.
In fact, decades-old U.S.-Saudi nexus have benefited the both, with Riyadh spending its petrodollars for American arms and Washington hatching plots to destabilize the region for its own sake. The U.S. backing for the Saudi regime's deadly mayhem in Yemen over the past 5 years is part of such plots. If the new U.S. administration claims that it really wants to break with the policies of the Trump government, it should walk the walk rather than talk the talk and stop supporting the al-Saud regime that has a long history of malign disregard for not only its own citizens like Khashoggi, but even the impoverished people like Yemenis.
Jonathan Fryer is a political analyst. He says the Biden administration's decision to recalibrate ties with the Saudi kingdom fails to address the role that Mohammed bin Salman had in Khashoggi's murder.
I think it's going a little far to say that the United States has forgiven Mohammed bin Salman for what has now been made public in the CIA report, which came out by Washington Times yesterday afternoon. Congress will obviously be looking at the report in detail over the weekend, and indeed the White House. But I think what will President Joe Biden will try to do is to, as was said in your report, to recalibrate relationship with Saudi Arabia. But he has always been very clear right from the start that his dealings will be direct with King Salman, who is 85 years old and not in very good health. And really he will be putting pressure on King Salman to really sideline MBS. But I don't think that's going to happen. And then, of course, we can, of course, come back to this and again ask, really, how is the United States making its pressure felt if it does not take individual actions such as bringing in a travel ban or asset freeze within the United States about the Crown Prince himself?
Supporters of Tunisia's biggest political party have taken to the streets in the capital in a show of support for Prime Minister Hisham Mechichi. Protesters call for national unity. The rally was held by the Nahda party, and it came as a standoff goes on between Premier Mechichi and President Saeed over a cabinet reshuffle. Last month, Mechichi replaced 11 ministers, a move approved by parliament. The new picks were from the Ennahda party and the Heart of Tunisia party, but the president has refused to swear in four of them. He's opposed to the absence of women among the new ministers and said some of them may have conflicts of interest. Well, the dispute comes as Tunisia is struggling with economic problems compounded by the pandemic. Armenian President Armen Sarkisyan has refused to sign an order issued by Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan to fire the army chief. Sarkisyan said the country's crisis cannot be resolved through frequent personnel changes. Meanwhile, thousands of people have hit the streets of the capital, Yerevan, for a third day in a row. They want the premier to resign for his handling of last year's conflict with Azerbaijan over the Nagorno-Karabakh region. Pashinyan has accused the army of an attempted coup after it called on him to step down. He sacked the army chief Oneg Gasparyan and invited the opposition to hold talks, but they insist that Pashinyan should resign. More anti-government protests in Chile turned violent, with police and riot gear clashing with demonstrators in the capital, Santiago. While police used water cannons and tear gas to disperse the crowd that was seen throwing rocks at security forces and attacking their armored vehicles. The Latin American country has witnessed street protests since late 2019 over social inequity. Demonstrations then started with fare hikes, setting off an intense wave of unrest that led to over two dozen deaths. Now, lately, the police's killing of a street artist has intensified the protests. National and international human rights groups accuse security forces of using excessive force against people expressing their anger at government policies. And with that brings us to the end of this World News Edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the assassination of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018, according to a new intelligence report that the Biden administration released on Friday, 26th of February, that offered the world a reminder of the brutal killing. The article that you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Julian Barnes, David Sanger, Mark Mazzetti, Michael Crawley, and Michael LaForgia. The piece is titled Saudi Crown Prince is Held Responsible for Khashoggi Killing in U.S. Report. Stay with us for more. Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the assassination of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018, according to a new intelligence report that the Biden administration released on Friday, 26th of February, that offered the world a reminder of the brutal killing. An elite team of operatives helped carry out the killing, the report said. The team reported directly to Prince Mohammed, who cultivated a climate of fear that made it unlikely for aides to act without his consent, according to the report. It omitted the brutal details of Mr. Khashoggi's death, including the dismemberment of his body with a bone saw after Saudi officials lured him to their consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. But the Biden administration took no direct action against Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, instead announcing travel and financial sanctions on other Saudi officials involved in the killing and on members of the elite unit of Royal Guard who protected the Crown Prince. The Biden administration concluded it could not risk a full rupture of its relations with the Saudi kingdom, relied on by the United States, to broker peaceful relations with the Israeli regime. Cutting off Saudi Arabia could also push its leaders towards China. Lawmakers of both parties praised the release of the report, but some Democrats, including Representative Adam Schiff of California, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, spoke out in dismay that the administration stopped short of more severely punishing Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for killing of Mr. Khashoggi. Khashoggi was a legal permanent resident of Virginia who was critical of the Saudi government in the columns that he wrote for the Washington Post. There are ways to bring about more personal repercussions without completely rupturing the relationship, Adam Schiff said in an interview. Adam Schiff added, "This is an official U.S. government statement that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia has blood on his hands, and that blood belongs to an American resident and journalist, and I think that's very powerful." The 2018 assassination of Jamal Khashoggi and the brutality of his death, detailed in news reports at the time, shocked the world. And it disgusted American officials, including the CIA director at the time, Gina Haspel, according to current and former intelligence officials. Gina Haspel and other American officials listened to a recording obtained by Turkish intelligence that not only captured Jamal Khashoggi's struggle against Saudi agents and his killing, but also the sounds of the bone saw being used on his body. The Saudi government issued a blistering response to the report's release and the penalties, rejecting the document as a negative, false, and unacceptable assessment about its leadership. "It is truly unfortunate that this report, with its unjustified and inaccurate conclusions, is issued whilst the Saudi kingdom had clearly denounced this heinous crime," the statement said. It noted that the kingdom had taken steps to prevent a repeat of the killing. It prosecuted 8 people in connection with the murder. Much of the evidence the CIA used to conclude that Prince Mohammed bin Salman was culpable in Jamal Khashoggi's killing remains classified. But the report's disclosure was the first time that the American intelligence community had made its conclusions public, and the declassified document was a powerful rebuke of the Crown Prince, a close ally of former U.S. President Donald Trump, whose continued support of him prompted international outrage. The release of the report signaled that President Joe Biden, unlike his predecessor, would not set aside the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, and that his administration intended to try to isolate the Saudi Crown Prince. We assess that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved an operation in Istanbul, Turkey, to capture or kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, said the report, issued by Mr. Biden's Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines. The decision to rebuke the Saudis without punishing Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman directly was the result of a weeks-long debate among aides to President Biden, who during the 2020 presidential campaign called Saudi Arabia a pariah state with no redeeming social value. 2 years earlier, Joe Biden called out the Trump administration for its inaction after Jamal Khashoggi's death, calling it embarrassing and dangerous. President Biden's newly formed national security team advised him that he could not bar the heir to the Saudi crown from entering the United States, nor weigh criminal charges against him, without breaching the relationship with a key Arab ally, according to officials. They said that a consensus emerged inside the White House that the cost of such a breach in terms of Saudi cooperation was simply too high. For Joe Biden, the decision was a telling indication that his more cautious instincts had kicked in. In an interview with Univision on Friday, 26th of February, President Biden said that he spoke yesterday with the Saudi king and not the crown prince. Mr. Biden added that he had made it clear to him that the rules are changing and we're going to be announcing significant changes today and on Monday to hold the Saudis accountable. It is outrageous what happened. Ultimately, the Biden administration announced penalties against Saudi officials, including a travel ban and freezing of assets of the kingdom's former intelligence chief, and sanctions against members of a paramilitary unit that took part in the assassination. The U.S. State Department also announced visa restrictions against 76 Saudi nationals accused of suppressing or harming journalists, activists, and dissidents. And more will be eventually be applied to others around the world as the administration expands enforcement of a new Khashoggi ban, the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said. The relationship with Saudi Arabia is bigger than any one individual, Anthony Blinken added on Friday at a news conference at the U.S. State Department. Blinken said, "What we've done by the actions that we've taken is really not to rupture the relationship, but to calibrate it to be more in line with the interests and our values." Dennis Ross, a former Middle East negotiator and foreign policy aide in administrations of both political parties, applauded Joe Biden for trying to thread the needle, calling the matter a classic example of where you have to balance your values and your interests. "We are now doing things that show a clear difference with the previous Trump administration on democracy and human rights," Dennis Ross added. The 4-page intelligence report contained few previously undisclosed major facts and reiterated the CIA's conclusion from 2018 that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. It made its case based on smaller pieces of evidence and the CIA's understanding of the Crown Prince's control of the Saudi kingdom, which intelligence officials have long said led him to a high confidence conclusion of his culpability. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman viewed Jamal Khashoggi as a threat and broadly supported using violent measures if necessary to silence him, the intelligence report concluded. American intelligence agencies learned that Saudi officials had planned an unspecified operation against Mr. Khashoggi, but the report said the United States has not learned when the Saudi officials decided to harm him. Members of the hit team flew to Turkey on 2nd of October 2018 after Saudi officials lured Jamal Khashoggi, who was seeking paperwork to marry his Turkish fiancée, into the consulate building in Istanbul. While the team arrived in Istanbul prepared to kill Jamal Khashoggi, American intelligence agencies were not confident that was their only authorized option. The spy agencies could not rule out that Prince Mohammed bin Salman might have preferred to capture Mr. Khashoggi, an American intelligence official said, adding that the CIA and other intelligence agencies have high confidence in their judgment that the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for an order to either capture or kill Jamal Khashoggi. Khashoggi's body was never found. According to the report, Prince Mohammed fostered an environment where his aides feared that any failure to follow his orders could result in their arrest. This suggests that the aides were unlikely to question Mohammed bin Salman's orders or undertake sensitive action without his consent, the report said. The report listed 21 individuals involved in the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, including members of a hit team. The operatives worked for the Saudi Center for Studies and Media Affairs, at the time led by Saud al-Qahtani, a close advisor of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Mr. Al-Qahtani's official job was the media czar for the royal court, and he was once in charge of the campaign to use social media to attack Saudi dissidents online. The report noted that Mr. Al-Qahtani had said publicly that he did not make decisions without the Crown Prince's approval. The report said that 7 members of Prince Mohammed bin Salman's elite protective detail, called the Rapid Intervention Force, or RIF, were part of the 15-man team that murdered Jamal Khashoggi. The unit has carried out a campaign of kidnapping, surveillance, detention, and torture to crush opposition to the Saudi royal family. Members of the RIF, or the Rapid Intervention Force, would not have participated in the operation against Khashoggi without Mohammed bin Salman's approval, the declassified report said. From the moment Mr. Khashoggi's death was discovered, Saudi officials sought to deflect blame from the Crown Prince. The Saudi government imprisoned 8 people in connection with Mr. Khashoggi's death, trying them largely secretively. Though 5 were originally sentenced to death after one of Mr. Khashoggi's sons said he and his siblings had forgiven the men who had killed their father, a Saudi court reduced the sentences to prison terms. Adam Schiff, the Democratic representative from California, said he met with White House officials on Friday, 26th of February, to press for more personal repercussions on the Saudi Crown Prince. "I don't think the president should be meeting with him. I don't think the president should be talking with him," Mr. Schiff said. "I think the administration should explore ways to go after assets that he controls." Ahead of the report's release, President Joe Biden spoke to King Salman of Saudi Arabia, and officials have said President Biden will speak only with the king, his counterpart as head of state, though others in the administration might speak directly to the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Representative Tom Malinowski, a Democrat from New Jersey who was the Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights in the Obama administration, said a visa ban for Mohammed bin Salman should be mandatory under existing law if the Secretary of State has credible information that he committed a gross human rights abuse, which the Secretary of the State just told us that he has.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, True Asceticism. There were Sufis who adopted and promoted as a solitary goal of existence excessive abstinence from the worldly delights, frugality, and voluntary poverty. They upheld that the source of all goodness in this world and in the hereafter was in having little or nothing, and in withdrawal from people, while the source of all evil in this world and in the hereafter was in having much and in mixing with people. They, as a result, denied themselves many types of permitted food, drink, clothes, and many other legitimate worldly delights, sometimes to the extent of becoming so frail that they were unable to perform basic errands. Some event went beyond mere bodily torture almost to the extreme of self-immolation. They refused to possess virtually anything, but often had to depend on other sources for their scant provisions, irrespective of whether those sources came from their family members, friends, or even government officials. In short, such people observed strict corporeal, abject poverty, erring not as much in the aims and objectives as in means and methods. The whole operation, instead of enriching them spiritually, in the end impoverished them even further, both physically and spiritually. So this is what some Sufis ended up doing, which was wrong. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the true asceticism, and we gave you a description of what some Sufis and their ideology had them do when it comes to asceticism. Just because they understood it wrong, they went down a path that led to their physical and spiritual poverty. Now, there is nothing virtuous in coveted excessive asceticism, poverty, and pacifism, basing them on God's will and believing that nothing can and should be done about it. Those Sufis articulated several traditions of the Prophet to the effect that poverty was Allah's preference and it was a source of the pride of the Prophet, who always found much gratification in it. But those traditions are plain forgery, as Islam in no way encourages deliberate excessive asceticism, poverty, and passiveness. This passivism and this poverty, which is self-inflicted, this is not the way of Islam. Certainly, Islam sees neither affluence nor poverty as inherently either good or bad. Islam sees potential goodness as much in affluence as in poverty. Just as it sees potential evil as much in affluence as in poverty. Consequently, the Prophet sought refuge in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from the evil of the trial of the affluence and from the evil of the trial of poverty, as well as from the evil of debt. So remember, brothers and sisters, in your life, Islamic asceticism is very clearly defined, and it is not the path of the deviants, which completely abandoned the world and which did not fulfill their responsibilities. Be responsible, be spiritual. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Second phase of the revolution. Leap in production.
The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, attaches a great deal of significance to education among workers. He says, in the current world and with the speedy technological developments, constant education and training and using the previous experience is a necessity for productive and working institutions so that economic prosperity increases through strengthening of productivity and quality of production. Please stay with us with a new program in our series, Second Phase of the Revolution, Leap in Production. Stay with us. Academic studies on successful economic models show that development occurs in societies in which, in addition to natural resources and material assets, there are notable human resources too. In other words, the countries that have achieved higher economic growth have better education, better skilled workers, and a more efficient workforce. The top parameter in development of any country is its manpower, which has a remarkable share in the economic, social, and cultural development of the country. Studies on development reveal that government policies, including investment on human resource development and expenses of research and development, have not only been effective on growth and productivity, but also on appropriate distribution of income and reduction of economic inequality. In the postmodern era, human asset is the greatest and most valuable property of every organization and every country. Accordingly, investment in this field, especially in the domain of innovative sciences relating to cyberspace and artificial intelligence, is a strategic necessity due to the fact that these two factors set the ground for exponential growth of production. In view of this, many researchers and experts of management and productivity maintain that a country's access to high level of productivity depends on having organizations and factories that enjoy adequate competitiveness, profitability, and creation of high added value. To create such organizations, it is essential to have skilled workforce and productive personnel. Human asset, in fact, demonstrates the know-how in the minds and thoughts of the personnel and it is the basic source of innovation and regeneration of an organization, introduces a combination of qualifications, attitude, and creativity of its personnel. Today, the role and importance of manpower is a yardstick in gauging production and offering services. In view of this, human asset or human personnel has gained higher share so that it has created the concept of know-how economy in production of gross domestic product or GDP. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's emphasis on leap in production and manufacturing during the era of maximum sanctions outlines a pleasant perspective of Iran's economy. The only way to exit from current economic woes is to fix the eyes on the interior and use the domestic capacities and capabilities in a synergy of skilled and specialist workforce. Human assets can both transform themselves and develop to modify other parameters. This will result in a permanent, dynamic economy. Alvin Toffler, a pioneer of change and development, says know-how and technology are the key to economic growth. Many countries have attained an important status in the global economy through planning and reliance on domestic resources and implementation of long-term projects based on know-how and technology. Statistics show that Iran ranks third in terms of manpower development. As for economic development, Iran has had a good economic growth, which is manifested in the fields of nanotechnology and knowledge-based companies. Development of technical and professional training plays a vital role in the current state of Iran's economy, because the country's infrastructural investment and increase of tools and equipment without an efficient human workforce will be useless or will be used ineffectively. Technical and professional training requires both development and a mix of know-how, skills, and creativity, particularly among a young workforce, the educated youth. Thus, technical and professional universities play a significant role in teaching the necessary skills for the workforce needed in industry, agriculture, and the service sector. Today, these universities have a capacity to educate nearly 150,000 students at 174 universities and higher institutions and academic centers. Targeted training of skills as a national strategy plays a key role in achieving economic success, social welfare, boosting creativity and innovation, and bringing about a leap in manufacture and production. This will pave the way for maximum use of capacities in the field of manufacture and production. Moving in this course will result in high and sustainable economic growth and will also assist in solving the problem of unemployment. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution has pointed out, we have many scientists, specialists, knowledge-based firms and innovative persons in the country, and this is amongst the most important economic infrastructure in every country. It means that the most important economic infrastructure for a country is the existence of a highly skilled and trained manpower.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a televised speech delivered on January 8, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the anniversary of an uprising led by the people of the city of Qom on January 9, 1978.
A few points about the Barjan, JCPOA, and the reductions in the commitments of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Another issue which is discussed frequently by officials, the people and politicians in cyberspace and in other podiums is the issue of the Barjan, JCPOA, and the Islamic Republic's commitments. Recently, the Islamic Republic announced that it has withdrawn from some of these commitments. Lately, it has also begun the 20% enrichment process and the administration implemented the bill ratified by the Majlis. This is one of the issues that is discussed frequently today. I wish to raise 2-3 points about the issue of the Barjan. America's return to the Barjan. The first point is a discussion about whether the US should return to the Barjan or not. We do not at all insist on this, and we are in no rush for the US to return to it. Our issues is not at all if the US will return to that deal or not. Our reasonable and logical demand is the lifting of sanctions.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Sanctions should be lifted. This is a right that has been taken from the Iranian nation, whether by the US or the Europeans, who are tied to the US's apron strings and who follow that country. They're obliged to grant this right to the Iranian nation. Only if sanctions are lifted, will the US's return to the Barjan have a meaning? Of course, There's also the issue of compensations, which is one of our demands and which will be pursued in other phases and stages. However, if sanctions are not supposed to be lifted, then its return to the Barajam might even be to our disadvantage. Not only will it not be to our advantage, but it will also be to our disadvantage. Of course, I have told officials, both in executive and legislative branches, that they should move forward in a careful manner and by observing all the necessary steps. The second point is that the decision by the Majlis and the administration to cancel the Barajam commitments is the right decision. It is a completely reasonable, logical, and acceptable decision.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.